going on? Jermaine Johnson. Tune in to Turn on the Jets podcast.
Hey, this is Vinny Pasquantino of the Kansas City Royals. Make sure you tune into the Turn on the Jets podcast.
Everybody, welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPod11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Joined by Badlands Turn on the Jets owner, legend, however you want to phrase him these days, Joe Caparoso. Joe, how are we doing today?
I'm doing well. Glad to be talking again this early part of the off season, and there are never dull or quiet days or week with the Jets. So we got to be up to riff on.
There is never a dull moment. Every time we turn around, something else is getting clipped or something else is, being floating around on Twitter and Instagram and the whole nine yards. Obviously, look, I kind of want to start here and then we can kind of get into a little bit of the quarterbacks and just some of the free agency trade stuff. Obviously, Lamar, the Ravens had their press conference, and I'm not sure why everyone's taking so much stock into what the Ravens are saying publicly. Joe Douglas said Jamal Adams was going to be a Jet for life. Josh Rosen's the guy. Vrabel said 4 days before A.J. Brown was traded that as long as he's the coach there, he'll never trade A.J. Brown. And 4 days later, he was gone. So that was my long-winded way of saying, don't believe a lot of what you hear publicly from teams. This is leverage season. This is leaky building season. But I want to kind of get your opinion first off on kind of state of the franchise, I guess, because now we're, what, 2-3 weeks removed from the Jets kind of collapsing, obviously, 6 losses in a row. And it feels like the vibe went from they're a quarterback away or they can even win with Zach Wilson to they're not good anymore. Then it flips back to they're really a quarterback away. Where are you at with kind of overall the Jets franchise and kind of where you are, your attitude is going into, February and March of an exciting offseason?
I think it's a matter of finding a happy medium. I think there has been progress in that they are not a true dumpster fire anymore, which they were during the Gase and Maccagnan era and large chunks of, Bowles' tenure and obviously certain parts of the Idzik time here as well. They are not in that like bottom three, bottom four teams in the league who are just like miles away. They've elevated above that, which is encouraging. Now, I think on the other end of it, there are a lot of teams right now who are saying we're just a quarterback away and like, we're really close. We're just a quarterback away. The Broncos feel that way. They're saying we'll just have a better performance from our quarterback and we'll get there. Teams like even just like whipping around the rest of the conference, like the Titans are like, we were a game away from making the playoffs. And if our guy was healthy, we would have been in. The Raiders are saying, if we just get a little better than Derek Carr, ironically a guy, the Jets are going to try to get most likely, we would have been in the playoffs. The Saints, if we had more consistent quarterback play, we would have been in the playoffs. We were a game away. The Panthers, if we had played Darnold all year instead of Mayfield, we're probably in the playoffs. So there's like a crop of like 8 to 10 teams of which the Jets are in that are not the Texans the Bears have a lot of maneuverability this offseason. We'll see how that plays out. But who think that they are just one player away. Now the Jets, look, they have some young talent. I apologize for all the sirens here in Hoboken. They have young talent to be excited about. You should be really excited about Garrett Wilson and Sauce Gardner and Breece Hall and AVT and Quinnen Williams and all these guys. That being said, it's a tricky spot for the current regime. This is a tough OC search to execute coming off of last year. It's not impossible, but tough. And there is rightly pressure on them to win this year because it's been a bit of time, especially for the general manager. And it's going to be a hard job this offseason, but it will be a way for them to prove that they are really the guys. If they are really the guys and they are going to stay for year 4, 5, and 6, let's call it together, they're going to have to find a way to get over the hump this offseason and answer a hard question at quarterback, navigate restructuring some contracts, and make do with just one first round pick and not the most money ever to spend in free agency in a weak class. That's what separates the middle of the pack, whatever, forgettable GMs, not the worst in the league, but certainly not one of the best of the leagues, which is where I'd put Joe Douglas right now. and the ones who end up really sticking around and winning. So it's not, you shouldn't be like in despair if you're a Jets fan. It's definitely better than it's been in other recent years. But I also wouldn't act like this regime is infallible, and they still don't have a lot to prove.
Yeah, look, I'm on the same page as you, kind of majority of what you mentioned there. I think that there's a world in which you can be positive about a lot of the young pieces, the young core. They finally have valuable players at receiver, cornerback, you know, obviously very valuable positions. They have valuable offensive linemen. The problem is obviously the only one that's you could really count on is Elijah Vera Tucker. And we don't really know, you know, maybe he plays tackle next year and he becomes more valuable. Obviously they have valuable players in a CJ Mosley, a Breece Hall play positions that, you know, are important, but obviously, again, as we know, you know, they're not left tackle, quarterback, you know, corner and wide receiver, which are really kind of those general four positions in football. I think that part of the issue here is the Jets fan, generally speaking, and I think people that kind of speak about the Jets, there's either people that are really high in the Jets that think this roster was quite, Zach was so bad and the offensive was so bad that, you know, with just even competent quarterback play, they're 11 win team and they're, you know, they're in the division round this weekend after, you know, they would have been the 5 seed and they would have beat Jacksonville and the whole 9 yards. And then there's other folks that I feel like believe, you know, in a way they were almost kind of lucky to be 7-10 with how bad the offense was and the defense isn't repeatable. And there's such a wide variance right now in the way you talk about the Jets. And as you mentioned, there's just a middle ground. I feel like, you know, I sound like a broken record because I say there's always a middle ground with everything in politics and sports and life, everything. But, you know, I really do think this roster's got a lot of talent, but there's a lot of holes and there's a lot of injury questions and there's coaches questions and they don't have a quarterback. And I just think we have to keep putting in perspective. They do not have a dominant edge player. They have a lot of really nice pieces on the defensive line. They don't have this, they're more of a group that's really dominant as opposed to like this one dominant edge guy. Their dominant D lineman is obviously Quinnen Williams. On the offensive side of the ball, they have two dominant young pieces, but they don't have a quarterback and their offensive line's a question. So I think just big picture, and they have ownership that I think does spend money and I think they do want to win. I just don't think they have a proven track record the last decade that's anything to brag about. And they have a general manager that, and a coach that I think a lot of people like. I think they're well-respected league-wide. We almost to a fault at sometimes you see the reaction if you criticize them in any way. But at the same time, they've made some mistakes early on. They have room to grow for sure. I guess all that and saying we're going into a big offseason in terms of a lot of the in-house kind of bookkeeping. It's one of the first Jets guys that we – Jets homegrown players that we all expect to get extended. Are you nervous at all about the Quinnen Williams stuff? Or do you think they kind of wrap this up? Because I just think this is one of those, if this drags out and goes poorly, it's same old Jets. And I can't even defend it, right? Because he's a homegrown guy, he's a good, big locker room guy, well-likable, you know, young, no character concerns. There's no reason to not sign him other than, you know, maybe this was his quote-unquote best year and he'll never reach that. Who knows? Maybe he gets better. You know, we don't know. And then there's the side of it. If the Jets wrap this up quickly, get it done, does it give you confidence going into the offseason? Wow, maybe this organization and these guys kind of do know what they're doing going forward.
I feel like it's going to get done pretty seamlessly. I don't think there's going to be any prolonged drama around it. I think they will probably read the tea leaves and the temperature that they are approaching hot seat status. And if I'm that front office, a layup win with the media, with the fan base is taking care of a homegrown all-pro player, which they've struggled with historically. And Quinnen or someone or close to him had already referenced how rare it is for a Jets first round pick to get a second contract from them. So I think if I was Joe Douglas, I would be looking and, you know, again, in a perfect world, you're just thinking through the lens of what's best for the team. And I'm not saying this isn't what's best for the team. But man, it'd be an easy way to get some really positive headlines about yourself and your team in late March, early April. Quinnen Williams gets a new 5-year, $115 million contract, you know, X guaranteed money. Maybe there's an out after 3 years. You know, look at the Jets. They're properly run now. They're taking care of their guys. It would be very unwise to have this drag into the summer over like $5 to $10 million and have the circus narrative bubbling up and the Jets don't take care of their guys. So seems like a very easy win financially. There's a way to make it work, and there's other things that they can do to make sure they have the money and not be, you know, too far up against the cap. So I think this is something that moves pretty seamlessly this offseason.
Yeah, look, I'm on the same page. I think the easiest thing to do would be to wrap Quinnen up pretty quickly and get Quincy to an extension quickly and just get that mess out of the way. Obviously, I spoke about this on the pod the other day, and I think we spoke about this. I'm not Quincy's biggest fan. I think there's certainly some issues that the Jets have to – he's gotten way better, and I'm not doubting that. I just – there is still some holes there in his game. That said, you know, you wrap those two guys up, you figure out the Huff extension quickly, or, you know, the second-round tender, as Jason Fitzgerald suggested yesterday. All of a sudden, you're in a spot where it's like, okay, three guys, big fan favorites – and not just you're just not that are also productive players, right? And Huff's your best edge rusher per snap basis. Quinnen Williams is your best player probably per snap basis. So getting these small things wrapped up and taken care of goes a long way. I want to kind of get your thoughts. Me and you, you know, I talked a lot about off air, a lot of the stuff that was in Zach Rosenblatt, who had a really nice piece this morning, you know, Zach Wilson, Michael Floor, and kind of the leaky building stuff. You know, we always joke that the Jets building is, everyone loves to say it's the Pentagon when it's in fact not. Were you surprised anything that was in that piece? I feel like a lot of what was in that piece was stuff that was kind of rumbled about for a long time, and it kind of all just got put in one piece. But the teammates being openly very excited that Zach was getting benched and openly very annoyed that he was coming back when Mike White was injured, the Elijah Moore stuff, some of the Michael Floor stuff, or is anything in there that was surprising to you, or this is just your what par for the course in an off season where, you know, GM, your front office and coaching staff may go a little bit head to head?
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
It was a really good read. I didn't find anything in it too shocking. I've referenced it a few times, but I sat behind the bench in that New England game, and you could basically tell that most of the offense was not comfortable with Zach Wilson. And there was a big disconnect, I'll put it that way, to be polite about it, in his relationship with the rest of his offensive teammates, which stinks, but there was clearly something there. You know, we had heard some smoke around the Elijah Moore stuff, so just seeing it contextualized a little more while entertaining was not overly surprising. I don't think from a personality standpoint, LaFleur or Zach Wilson were the most popular people in the building. And you have a situation now where there'll be a little bit of finger pointing between the front office and the coaching staff. LaFleur is an easy guy to kick on the way out the door. I think sooner or later, Zach will be out the door too. So the two of them are likely going to get a lot of the heat because they won't be part of the plan or major parts of the plan next year. So I think this is the start of a good amount of stuff you'll see that sounds like this about what went wrong. If you're a Jet fan, like, I don't think you should be that surprised that a lot of offensive players in that building, probably a lot of your favorite players on the Jets offense, we're not crazy about either Zach Wilson or Mike LaFleur and are excited there's going to be changes there.
So on a slight comical note, before we kind of head on some of the other serious stuff, on the scale of things you thought you'd say on January 19th, 2022 or 2023, I guess. Wow. Whereas one of them being Sam Darnold, if he had played more this year, would have made the playoffs, and B, how funny will it be next year when Mike LaFleur is calling plays for the Rams and instantly well-regarded again in NFL circles, and everyone is like, oh, here, same old Jets, even if it probably could end up being the right decision. Like, What is going to be more annoying, the fact that you just said that, or B, that Michael Fleur, calling plays for the Rams likely next year, like the way it looks, will be openly lauded by Greg Olson and Kevin Burkhardt for 3 straight hours on Rams primetime games?
Look, I think let's keep the context that Darnold was in a division that was won by an 8-9 team. I think Sam has shown that he can be a good spot starter, not a full-time starter. And that's not a bad thing to be. He'll have a long, successful career in the NFL because he can come in and start for 3 or 4 games and provide some juice. I think LaFleur, I was more high on LaFleur than most, not while admitting that he stunk down the stretch last year. The Rams are going to be an interesting team to watch next year. We'll see exactly how that roster comes together, but he's someone who will be in the league for a long time as an offensive coordinator or as an assistant offensive coach. One, there's a ton of nepotism in the NFL. So it's a small circle of the same people getting different jobs, as we see from all the candidates the Jets are interviewing. And I think he'll do pretty good next year. He's not a bad offensive mind. The Jets, neither side set up each other for success. And it was probably time for them to part ways, but I think he'll be okay overall with that Rams situation or wherever he ends up next.
Yeah, no, I didn't want to get you clickbaited with the Sam thing. I just thought it was pretty comical because there was
like, I gotta be careful.
I know.
You get the context, think it's taken out of context. All of a sudden, that's it.
Yeah, you end up like Connor today saying the Jets should draft a tight end after 8 minutes of talking about
how there were 7 other paths they could go.
That was the most unlikely but potential path if all 8 other things go wrong in the 13 picks. I don't want to get into Sam, but it is funny that, looking at some of these guys where, the reason they didn't have success here, we talked about a little bit this morning about, Jets young quarterbacks and this kind of finishing on the Zach piece of just the offseason of whoever the Jets have at quarterback next year. I think we can all agree there needs to be a plan in place, both from an offensive coordinator perspective, quarterback coach. You look back at the Jets have gone on these runs where they 4 or 5, I think you referenced it all the time between 98 and 2011. They made the playoffs 7 or 8 times in the 12 or 13 years. It was very random times where they wouldn't make the playoffs. And it wasn't because the roster wasn't good. It was usually because Chad Pennington got hurt, Brett Favre got hurt. There wasn't years where they were legitimately bad outside of 1 or 2. It was Vinny got hurt. It wasn't because they weren't good. The roster was generally good. And if they got healthy quarterback play, they pretty much made the playoffs every year. Maybe I'm missing 1 or 2 years, but it feels like if you go back in Jets history, other than maybe 2000, even every year they were good because the quarterback was healthy and having support around them. And it's not just that the Jets have tried a lot of different things, but having veteran proven guys that you may have to overpay. And this is where I'm going to lead into the coordinator thing. And I don't want to touch on it too much. You and Connor did a really nice job on it last night. So, if anyone listening, go listen to the Badlands episode from, Wednesday, January 18th, if you want to get into some more of the quarterback partnership with coordinators. But senior offensive assistant, something mixed with a quarterback, that could be the quarterback coach, who knows, mixed with an offensive play caller that's innovative, understands today's NFL, I think is the key. And then no matter, who you have in here as a quarterback, you hope you maximize them. And obviously you'd love the top of the market guy, but, bring in some competition for people. You look at a lot of the defensive line, the secondary, all of a sudden they brought in competition for all these guys and the Jets instantly got way better at those spots. It's weird how that works. The running back room, Michael Carter was nice. Guess what? Breece Hall is better. Right. So
I think Ty Johnson and Zonovan Knight may also be better too.
Yeah, look, it's what happens, right? You look at some of these position rooms and where the Jets made huge strides this year. They brought in talent to compete with some of the other talent they had on the roster. We thought the Jets had some nice talent, with Moore and Mims and Davis and Berrios, right? That's a decent room. Not great, but decent. You bring in Garrett Wilson, all of a sudden people start sliding into their proper, ranking. I kind of wanted to touch on the coordinator thing just quickly from this perspective. What do you think happens first? You think they figure out coordinator first and then, they use that to kind of determine who they're going to bring in at quarterback? Or do you think the Jets kind of string this out, talk to candidates now, and depending on what happens with a Carr, Lamar, Rodgers, whoever, then they kind of pair the quarterback with the coordinator? Do they try to go the route of bring a coordinator in, you bring in Hackett or whoever, hoping for Rodgers? Or do they go, we're going to get Rodgers, just using Rodgers as the example, don't take this out of context, but then bring in a Hackett, with him as a partnership duo. What's more likely, I guess?
I think the offensive coordinator is still ultimately hired before we get real clarity on what's going to happen at quarterback. Hopefully they have a plan A, plan B, plan C up on the whiteboard, and they have, you know, a strategy for all these different things. My guess is that it's going to be a couple more weeks before they make a decision, and where they think they end up with a quarterback will help inform it heavily. I hopefully they are not going to do something where they're like, well, like, we're not crazy about Hackett, but we think he's going to help us recruit Rodgers. Like, we saw that worked out for Denver last year. I think, like, talk to as many people as you can, have an idea of where your plan A is at quarterback, and then try to pair those decisions to the best of your ability. With some of the guys, they may be able to work with, you know, a range of different people as their offensive coordinator. We'll see. I think it's going to be a bit before they make a decision, at least another like week and a half or so.
I'm fully on the same page there. I want to kind of quickly hit on, you know, three quick topics here. Sauce Garrett Wilson up for the Pepsi kind of fan voted rookie of the year. Quickly, who wins? Does Sauce get the W over Garrett Wilson? Or I feel like a Jets person is going to win a Twitter award.
I think Sauce ultimately ends up winning it, along, of course, with winning Defensive Rookie of the Year. I think Sauce is the guy, though.
I tend to agree. I hope Jets fans, you know, are able to vote for both. So that'd be a nice, you know, kind of trophy on their mantle. I wanted to kind of, this doesn't have to be kind of long here, but in terms of power ranking, I guess, their biggest needs in free agency in that trade market, because obviously the draft will impact, you know, its own being and everything. And if they have their picks, if they don't, you know, we don't know yet. But from a free agency trade perspective, what would you say the top three, your top three biggest needs you'd like to see them address, whether it's for depth or whether it's for, you know, guys to come in and be starters? You know, what are those top three you think biggest position needs in free agency in the trade market?
All right, let's put everything aside with quarterback. I think, you know, defensively, I'm looking at safety and linebacker. They need someone to pair with Jordan Whitehead, who will be back next year. Linebacker, let's assume, we know we're going to get at least one more year of Mosley. Quincy Williams is probably back because of Quinnen. Still getting some more there, because I think Quan's going to leave for a bigger role elsewhere, and I don't think you're going to get anything out of Sherwood or Nazardine. So another piece at linebacker could be needed. They need another defensive. I'd like to see them add another. Finally, I could say I want another interior defensive lineman. Let's have someone better in that Solomon Thomas role, and that Solomon Thomas, like Nathan Shepherd role. Can you get someone better there? Offensively, I do think they're going to address it predominantly in the draft, but they can continue to add to that offensive line. They just keep throwing pieces against the wall so you have as much depth as possible. You know, Herbig, I know it ended poorly, but he was good in like the short spurt. So you got to keep throwing some like veteran chips there and guys who could be spot starters. So curious, you know, to see how they approach that. But and the only other thing I would keep an eye on is wide receiver. It's a pretty interesting list, actually. I think Corey Davis is gone. So Darius Slayton, Jacoby Myers, is there someone else that is plug and play? Or do you go big and go get a DeAndre Hopkins in the trade market or something like that? But they need another receiver for their 11 personnel.
Yeah, no, I'm on the same page here. I think the safety will be a camp competition between Tony Adams and whoever they bring in, whether it's a pick or a free agent. I think adding another linebacker and then, you know, center and guard are the two other ones. You know, do the Jets move AVT to tackle and sign a guard? Do they re-sign McGovern or sign a center or draft one? I think that's important. And then you mentioned receiver. Is it a Hopkins, Evans, one of those bigger names that's Godwin, whoever there, obviously maybe not Godwin because of the size. Last quick question here before we wrap. Do you think the Jets make a quarterback move within the next month? Meaning, is Derek Carr going to happen now? Is Derek Carr the guy, and does it happen before the February 15th deadline? Basically, do they trade for him, or do they kind of, you know, let it play out past February 15th?
Man, that's a tough one. I'd say it's almost like 50-50, because listen, Lamar would be a ton of fun. Do I think mathematically it's like likely to happen? Probably not. It's probably like a 10 or 15% chance thing. I think there's definitely a world where Garoppolo just goes to the Raiders. Maybe Brady goes to the Dolphins. I don't know. That's kind of been like the interesting one getting thrown out there. it would not shock me if they were aggressive just to put a bow on Carr if they could, if they felt confident in it early in the offseason. I'm curious to see who else is like in the market for him, but it feels like somewhere between like a 30 and 50% chance I could see that happening.
I will continue to keep that updated. I'll have another episode either potentially Saturday or Sunday. Joe's going to have an episode with Connor coming out tomorrow. I believe there'll be a Badly Evans episode tomorrow as well. And then, you know, a ton of content on the feed. So thank you everybody for listening. You know, rate, review, subscribe to the pod and make sure you're subscribed to Badlands. And we'll talk to you guys next week.